Dubcast. I'm Johnny. He's George. Let's get right into it. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. We've got some basketball. We've got some football. We've got some other random eccentri from the, the college sports world. Let's start a little bit. Spring practice has started, right? So spring has sprung, not officially, but, Punxsutawney Phil said it did. So I'm cool with that. I'll use that over any stupid, meteorological or astrophysical phenomenon to verify that fact. So they're practicing. The 15 million quarterbacks remain on campus. There's a lot of talk about the transfers. Everybody wants to know, how they look, how they're doing, all that kind of stuff. I don't know that you can glean too much from the first few days of spring practice, even though I think everybody wants to. I think what's more interesting than, brief snippets of practice that we get, or, maybe people saying like, oh, it's throwing motion, whatever half-assed analysis that we can actually make from, that brief look into what the team is actually doing. I'm more interested in what people are saying. So my first thing that I want to talk about here was a quote from Devin Brown. And, he was responding a little bit to how people might be saying maybe he'll transfer, maybe he'll leave. This is the guy taking first team snaps right now, by the way. And the quote that he had, this is to the media, after one of these practices or during one of these practices, this is courtesy of Adam King at 10 TV, said, "I think people are cowards. I think people have this thought in their own head that I'm going to leave and I'm a quitter, but that's never been me." And here's the thing, man. I think that's awesome. I think that's great that he's got that kind of moxie, that he's in it to win it. How do you feel this kind of playing out, George, by the end of spring? Because, we heard similar things from Tate Martell when Justin Fields showed up, and then Tate was out of here in a couple weeks after that. So I don't know. Is Devin Brown, is he legit when he says he's in it to win it, or is he, just kind of, not backing down from a challenge, I guess.
I just hope they name a starter more quickly than they did last season at this point.
Well, they don't need to name Brown. They don't need to name the starter Brown at the end of spring, right? They don't need to do it that quickly, do they?
No, but I mean, in terms of what we're trying to glean from this process, and we're starting out with, four potential starting quarterbacks next season, it's like, oh, well,
let's put them all in the field.
That's somehow a more complex and worse problem than the quarterback battle the team had last year, where they still had two. I don't want to call them two lame ducks, but well, we at least know how Kyle McCord ended up in the long-term trajectory of things. If Devin Brown couldn't even beat that guy out a year ago, I'm not sure how optimistic I would be about him leading the pack.
I just love it how he's calling everyone who's commenting on this cowards. I think that's my favorite part about it, because he's right. I am a coward.
Yeah.
But I also don't know.
Chicken shit over here.
I am, but I don't know that makes me wrong about Devin Brown's ability to win the starting quarterback competition. And I know he's taking first team reps right now, but I'm thinking let me put it this way. If Ohio State rolls into late August of this year, and that quarterback, hierarchy has not changed up until that point, I think they got bigger problems. I think that's an issue. I don't think that will be indicative of Devin Brown taking this next leap to being a Heisman caliber quarterback. I think that'll mean that nobody else can do it. And that's going to be a problem. So I wish him the best. And if he does truly transform into this next level quarterback that everybody wants to see, that's awesome. And not clearly he was a highly ranked recruit. I mean, nothing, to cast aspersions against his talent, but man, I don't know. I mean, I think that's what you have to say when you're in that position, but you bring in a guy like Will Howard, you expect Will Howard to be the dude. And, I don't think he's gotten necessarily glowing reviews quite yet. But he also hasn't really been able to do much quite yet. I don't think his new teammates have seen a whole lot of him to this point. And it'll be interesting to see how that changes over the next few weeks. And, obviously into the spring game, when we finally actually see some of that in action.
I was watching UFC 299 last night with Andy and Dan, and it turned out that actually Devin Brown was in attendance with Lincoln Kineholtz, and Dan suggested that the two of them should go at it for 15 minutes in the octagon to determine who should be the starting quarterback next season. So,
yeah,
if, you know, Devin Brown really wants to cement that he has no cowardice in him, I think that would be an interesting way to go about it.
He just needs to beat up all the other quarterbacks, and I will feel comfortable with him taking over the reins. The problem is that Will Howard is legitimately like 6'4" and like 240 pounds.
Well, and the other issue too, and this would be the main issue if Devin Brown ends up becoming the starter, is the guy is extremely injury prone for right. better or for worse.
Right.
And we've seen it not only in the regular season.
I don't
season,
know how he could be for better injury prone. I think that's usually talked up as a negative.
Well, I mean, for better in the sense that if he clearly establishes himself as the best option they have at quarterback.
You take
and
that
then,
risk. Okay, that makes
well,
sense.
Well, right, you take that right. risk, and then we saw what happened in the game against Missouri when they did. They put all their eggs in that basket, and then they didn't do enough to develop a backup plan because it was, you know, a bowl game that didn't really hold any true significance in the grand scheme of things, and they were already missing players, and so Kineholtz got thrown out there like grotesquely unprepared, and you know, it's just a matter of saying, do you want to give the starting reps in practice to someone that is proven to be the most fragile of the candidates that you have at this point?
Right.
I really don't want to see that. So I wonder how much that's going to be weighed against him as this quarterback battle progresses. But, you know, to the point of Will Howard, I don't think the guy gave up a starting job with Kansas State to, you know, come serve as a backup at another school, particularly Ohio State, regardless of what the early feedback has been from media or even his own teammates. So it's still too early really to say anything, but I will say in terms of trying to incorporate more of a like dynamic style for the offense than what we saw last season, I don't know how you can look at what Will Howard offers in terms of physicality and experience doing that versus Devin Brown doing the same thing and, you know, having not only the injury problems, but also the ball security issues for those short yardage running situations. Just doesn't really seem worth it to me. I can't imagine that the things that Devin Brown is supposed to do very well, that Will Howard doesn't do them just as well, if not better, and offers much more starting experience upside. So,
yeah,
credit, you know, Brown's doing what he has to do in terms of, you know, being stout and resolute in terms of competing for the job. But I mean, look, if we're going to go with a running quarterback period, I mean, Aaron Nolan 2024, I've been saying it since last season, but you know, I know Julian Sayin's in the mix now too and whatever. And I mean, there's still, it's like, it's the first couple weeks of March as we're saying this, the spring game itself is still over a month away at this point. So
right.
Who knows what's going to happen and how things could shake out. I think it's encouraging for Brown to say something like that. And you know, it's not like I would have expected Kyle McCord to say something like that in light of, you know, what just happened after they weren't ready to commit to him as the starter next year. So you know, it's better than just being silent on the issue, but also it's like, what do you expect the guy to say?
Yeah,
I'm excited to compete for the number two spot.
Yeah, that's right. And that's totally fair. And as much as I, like I said, don't have a ton of confidence in Brown keeping that number one spot, I do have to give it to the guy and say, like, hey, man, like, if you're in that spot, you gotta exude confidence. You're not going to come out and say, you know, he's not going to be droopy dog and be like, I don't think I can do this. And, you know, freak out and say that's obviously Will Howard.
I wish the listeners could see the face that you just
No, that's what you got to do. You got to pull the cheeks to do the, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, you got to do that.
Johnny was a voice actor in another life.
That's right. You know, but other things that we're hearing from spring practice are pretty, I think, awesome. The stuff from Jim Knowles, particularly about Sonny Styles going to linebacker, that's permanent. It's not changing. He's a full-time linebacker. Styles and CJ Hicks going at it for Will, linebacker. Gabe Powers out there at linebacker. Let's keep talking about linebackers. Actually, my favorite quote from him was about James Laurinaitis, who said, he's a lot nicer to them than I am. So last year it was good cop, bad cop. Now the bad cops left the room. So I'm sure the players love it. Which actually, I mean, James Laurinaitis is a very chill dude. He's a very laid back, nice guy. So I'm not surprised by that, but that's funny to hear. And then obviously, you know, Denzel Burke, a guy coming back. I mean, in terms of like pedigree, and if you had to project, let me put it this way. If you had to project players on the team right now who I think will have maybe the longest or most successful NFL career, I think Burke is going to be one of those, you know, top two or three guys that you would choose from, kind of an elder statesman at this point. And he was talking about like Caleb Downs really coming out and adding a dimension to the defense. The fact that it's, you know, title or bust. He says natty or bust, that's our mentality. I mean, that's kind of obvious, but I like the fact that the team is embracing it. You know what I mean? Like, and they should.
It
they
should be beat Michigan or bust first.
Well, and that's fine, but my point is that I don't want to see a team shy away from the narrative that's going to be built around them, which is that this is a, I mean, obviously it's going to be a playoff team with the expanded playoff. That's, you know, anything else would be absolutely unacceptable. But the fact that this is a team that should be playing for national championship, on paper, that's true. Narratively, that's what's going to be pushed on them, and they have to embrace that. That can't be something where they go, oh, well, I don't know. That's, you know, we'll just going to try our best and take it one game at a time. I don't think they can. I don't think they can approach the season that way. They have to go and embrace the fact that they are going to be at the top of everyone's list to beat, and they have to be that much better to succeed and do that. So I'm glad to hear that even in the spring. I think that's awesome. A few more things from Jack Sawyer. Jack Sawyer talking about JT Tuimoloau, who, you know, they're bros. They're ready to be the Bash Brothers and kind of wreck some havoc, you know, quote unquote, wreck havoc on quarterbacks. I enjoy that. You know, it's just, it's cool to see these guys just, I think, be, like I said, embracing what they're expected to do. And also, I don't know. This is what a veteran team looks like. Like, if you look at these quotes, if you listen to these sound bites, they're about their business. This is not a team who has any confusion about who they are, or who they want to be, particularly on defense. I know there's a lot of elements that they have to incorporate in offense and figure out how that works, but nobody here looks like they're running away from the moment. And I really appreciate that.
I'm just tempering my expectations because it's, you know, it saying it is one thing, but we still need to keep in mind this is a team that's on a 2-game losing streak right now.
Okay, but it's March.
Very, so very short of its expectations, which were almost identical to what they're presumably going to be going into this season that they were last season.
You're not wrong, but it's March, and I'm going to pretend like them saying this now guarantees a national championship in January of 2025. So that's... But you're not wrong. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. By the way, other thing I want to mention before we move on to basketball, this is probably the most important development of, I don't know, the past 3 or 4 months in Ohio State football. They've got a punter. Now, Ohio State lost their punter from last time. They're going to Vanderbilt. Good for them. Nick McLardy, I'm going to call him Nick McLarge Huge because he's a 6'7" punter who weighs
Nick McLardy.
He weighs 255 pounds. I don't know what that is in kilograms, but that's a lot. He's a large human being, and I guess that's gonna be the dude. He says he's ready to compete at Ohio State. I don't know how you bring on a 6'7", 255 punter and say
maybe the McLaughlin HO baby.
Put another shrimp on the McLaughlin. Yeah, he's large.
We have a whole season of those to look forward to.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We're gonna take all the sound clips from the Simpsons episode where they go to Australia and just, you know, and just abuse that to death. But I don't know. I think that's pretty awesome. Hopefully the dude can produce.
That's not a punt. This is a punt.
I see you've played onsides, offsides before. Australian punters, always funny. So yeah, that's pretty wild. There's that one video of him allegedly punting at like 90 yards or some goofy crap like that. I don't know how that translates into the actual like game, but you know, considering you're bringing out a punter the size of an offensive lineman, do whatever you want, whatever. His form is great. He's the best punter ever. I'm not going to say otherwise. He's terrifying. So that's pretty cool.
With Ryan Day's penchant for calling and drawing up fake punts, I just wonder what they're going to be able to do with that guy. Yeah. You know?
You check him. Yeah.
Even though it always goes to the up back, I just think, like, you know, can he throw a little bit? Are they going to have him run like the 15 yards up under center for like a surprise sneak?
No, but that's
like a fourth and short.
For real, though, you could do that. If it's like fourth and two, the guy falls forward and he gets the first down. Yeah, no, they should do crap like that. I think that would be incredible. So yeah, Nick McLarty, welcome to Columbus. That's fantastic.
G'day, mate.
And I can't even do it. All right. So let's talk a little bit of basketball. First of all, we've spent the last several months talking about how crappy the men's team is, at least until the firing Chris Holtman, and then how great the women's team is. This episode will be a bit of reversal of that because men's basketball is out here winning more games in the Big Ten. They just skunked Rutgers. I mean, it wasn't even close. They beat the absolute tar out of it. It was close in the first half. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, it was a two-point game.
It was a two-point game. And then in the second half, everybody was hitting everything. And they finished the game going 50% from the field, 45% from three. And it was an incredibly satisfying win. And they closed the regular season out in a great way. They finish with kind of a incredibly unexpected 19-12 overall record, 9-11 in the conference. Every time this gets updated, I love it when it's posted in Slack. Jake Diebler has 5 wins in the Big Ten. Chris Holtman had 4 wins in the Big Ten, and Juwan Howard, who has been coaching all season, has 3 wins in the Big Ten. So
what a time
to be alive. Yeah, Jake Diebler has got this team playing obviously much, much better basketball. And where I might have been a little trepidatious at the beginning to say, like, oh, you know, what he's doing is actually like having a, you know, a sustainable impact. Well, it seems like that's pretty much the case now. I don't think anybody, including myself, can make the claim that he hasn't made this team demonstrably better, right? Like permanently better. I don't know that they're going to go out there and win the Big Ten tournament. They may not even win the first game, but they have become a much better team in the last several weeks than they had been previously. And I think it's, I mean, obviously showing on the court, but you can just see it in a, you know, play to play basis, right? Where they're just playing with more aggression, more confidence. They're just putting their foot on the absolute, like the pedal to the metal. And that was the thing, you know, I think in previous games, there was a point about halfway through the second half where they were up, you know, by like, I think a pretty good amount, by like 10, 12 points. And you're like, okay, this is a point where 2 months ago, this is a team where their brain just blank out, right? They get this deer in the headlights look, and then the other team makes a run and they either blow the lead or almost blow the lead. And instead what this team did is they just kept making shot and shot and shot and shot. And they ended up winning by like, what, over 20 points. So it gives you a lot of confidence going into the Big Ten tournament. And again, are they going to be able to do enough to get into March Madness? I don't know. They're not even listed as a bubble team in most projections, but they could. And if they beat Iowa, the Big Ten basketball tournament bracket was just released. If they beat Iowa, they beat Illinois. That's a tall order, but if they beat Illinois, I feel like they got to be one of those 6 or 7 teams selected from the Big Ten for the dance. I think they would have earned it by that point and shown that they are a different team than they were that lost a billion games in a row.
Yeah, and the consistent pattern that we've seen is, like, you know, even going back to the Purdue win where they had the lead at the half, but, you know, further looking at the Michigan State game where they were down at the half and both teams were kind of struggling offensively, but Ohio State really hadn't hit their stride at all. But you mm-hmm. saw a similar thing today where they were only up by 2 at the end of the first half to Rutgers, but Rutgers also did not make a single field goal until about 8 minutes into the game. Right. Their first 3 points were all on free throws through the first 8 minutes of the game, but Ohio State still let them back into it. And, you know, before the end of the half, but then the consistent pattern you've seen in all those games are the second half, the halftime adjustments immediately pay dividends predominantly on the defensive end where Ohio State is able to just put the clamps on their opponents. And then regardless of whatever rhythm they're able to generate offensively, they're then able to either come back or build leads out from just being 2 points into double-digit victories. That was the case even against Michigan, where the game was a little bit uncomfortably close despite the clear discrepancy in the talent and trajectory of the two teams at this point in the season. But and the same thing with the Nebraska game, is that they were able to build and eventually, you know, not buckle, where earlier in the year their problem was maintaining these leads that they may have had in the second half, and then ultimately conceding the game or just outright quitting when the lead got to be double digits or whatever for the other team.
Right.
And that's a reflection of really, really good coaching, that those adjustments that are coming in at halftime are being not only successfully implemented, but implemented so quickly. Now, if they really, really do want to make a strong enough impression to get into the tournament, they're going to have more successful starts to games and first halves than perhaps what they've shown over this winning streak. But Diebler has clearly established himself at the bare minimum as someone that is worthy of being a head coach, if not here, then somewhere next season, based on the run of success that they've had within these last like five or six games. So it's been a nice treat given the unpalatable sadness that most of we all had to endure as right. Buckeye fans, you know, the long January as it was under the tyranny of Holtman and
the tyranny of Chris Holtman.
Yeah.
DMing people after mean tweets and articles. You know, the thing about it was, about this game in particular, is that everybody got involved, right? It didn't feel like, and this is when I start to feel confident about a basketball team, where it isn't one guy just shooting the lights out of the ball, scoring 25 points, and you're like, okay, the rest of the team kind of just, you know, lollygags behind them. Everybody was scoring. And I think the key fact, or the fact that kind of like clinches that, is Felix Okpara, who has had a terrible last few games. I mean, he's been awful, just straight up bad. Had a great game against Rutgers. I mean, he didn't score a ton of points, but he was a huge presence on the boards, had 8 rebounds more than anybody else, got a steal, 3 blocks, 10 points. I mean, that's the kind of game you want to see out of that dude. You don't expect him to score 15, 20 points a game. You want him to make an impact defensively, be a viable option offensively, if not the first or second choice, at least somebody who can get you, you know, some shots and some points in the paint. And he was that. That's what he did. That's exactly what he did. He was asked to do that, and he did it, and he did a great job. And if they want to possibly make a run in this Big Ten tournament, they're going to need everybody to step up. So seeing a mass effort, a team effort, a true team effort like this, where nobody scored more than 14 points. Roddy Gale Jr. was the leading scorer at 14 points. That's the kind of thing that you want to see out of this team going into the tournament. So I'm excited about that. I think that was a pretty cool thing to see. You know,
I think the bigger reflection of Diebler getting more out of the rotation than Holtman is that Scotty Middleton has suddenly blossomed into the second best 3-point shooter on the team.
Right. Where you actually want him to take a shot.
Right. Whereas under Holtman, like, the guy was basically invisible and not having a good season.
Right.
And now that he, as we've spoken about on earlier shows, the players feel more empowered now than they did when they were presumably facing more scrutiny under Holtman and had a shorter leash for, you know, playing outside of their role or their comfort zone. Middleton has suddenly blossomed into a very much needed offensive threat, particularly as, you know, Gale's shooting waned from, you know, when he was hotter earlier in the season before conference play started. Now it's nice that they can go to someone for reliable perimeter scoring other than Battle now, because even Bruce Thornton is going through kind of a slump, I think, in terms of his own perimeter shooting. So the fact that they didn't have a guard from the perimeter that they could consistently rely on for a three, and that Middleton has kind of filled out that role now, it is a reflection of the fact that there's the players throughout the roster are more encouraged to play up to that necessity and find their roles within the team than they had under Holtman. So it's been really encouraging all around everything we've seen from Diebler, even if I know we spoke about it last week that it's probably not realistic to expect the guy's going to be back next season. You can at least understand in theory why half of the fan base is split on it. And there's at least rumors that the wealthy donors that may or may not be, you know, in charge of the decision, not in charge of the decision making, but at least influencing it in some way,
right,
are considering someone with program ties like Diebler to be a leading candidate for getting that job long term.
Yeah, I mean,
he's at least demonstrated what his worth is, I think.
Absolutely, he has. Absolutely, he has. And I think when people were saying that after the Purdue win, I'm like, okay, you gotta see some stuff. But if this guy comes out and they win some games in the Big Ten tournament, they look good, you're like, okay, like that's, you got to talk to the guy. You have to at least see what his vision is for the team and what that looks like. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily the best choice, but what I am saying is that he would definitely have earned it by that point if he hasn't earned it already. So I'm with you. I don't think that that's necessarily the right move to make, but I definitely think he's making his case in a way that is impossible to ignore. And it's a lot of fun to see. Now, at this point, you know, I think the rumor mill has centered pretty squarely on two guys, Sean Miller and Dusty May. I don't have any particular insight on, you know, whether either of those guys has the inside track on it. But I don't think I would be sad about either. I would prefer Dusty May, in part because I think Miller brings more baggage, and I think sometimes he gets less with more. I would rather see a guy like, now granted, some people might say like, oh, well, you're just hiring Dusty May on the strength of one, you know, amazing Final Four run. And that's not true. Dusty May's done an incredible job where he's been for a long time. He is not like some flash in the pan coach. This is a guy who knows what he's doing. So I would be totally fine with that.
Here's what I can say about Dusty May's success relative to someone that lives in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida Atlantic is invisible down here. Like, Florida International has more buzz in Miami even than Florida Atlantic does, despite Florida Atlantic's recent success. And the other, and that's not even accounting for the fact that one of the biggest and most controversial NIL juggernauts is in this city too, in
that's right,
Miami.
Right.
Like, that's what Dusty May has had to deal with locally in terms of, you know, competing for attracting talent and making a name for that program. And he's had more success doing that than one of the most predominant benefactors of the infancy of the NIL era.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still been able to carve out Florida Atlantic as a presence in spite of that. So you wonder what that guy would be able to achieve in a place like Ohio State, where he's not even going to have to compete with that kind of presence that he's dealing with in Florida Atlantic relative to University of Miami. So
right.
I think Sean Miller is a bit more of a proven commodity, particularly with having, I think, a more established foothold relative to recruiting the area,
mm-hmm,
that made me think that I wanted, you know, him more. But the more and more I think about it relative to the success that I have literally been witness to down here in South Florida, I wouldn't be upset with either guy, but I'm starting to kind of lean more Dusty May over Sean Miller too.
Yeah. And you know, again, nothing to take away from Sean Miller. Sean Miller obviously is a known commodity, like you said. Interesting point about the recruiting inroads. There's a lot of really good talent in Ohio, in the Midwest in general. Knowing how to approach that and to talk those guys into coming to Columbus is a big deal. However, I think Dusty May would have some clout with those kids as opposed to Sean Miller, in part because he's not going to be seen as a guy who's just like bouncing around from like the Xaviers of the world to Ohio State or whatever. I think there's more cachet in saying, look, I came here because I think I have a better system, or I know what's going on, you know, benefit you more than a guy like Sean Miller, who's been in and out a bunch of times. Dusty May won't be seen as a opportunist. I think he'd be seen more of a guy who is like, I just want more attention. I want you to come on board to what I'm bringing, so that you can like help make something great, as opposed to a guy like Sean Miller. It's like, okay, well, you're going to be kind of subservient to whatever the Sean Miller system is, right? It's not going to be a collaborative thing. It's going to be you're going to be a Sean Miller player, and you're going to play, you know, in Sean Miller's team. And I think that changes the dynamic a little bit when you're at a school like Ohio State, because, you know, you don't want to be seen as a guy that comes in, you know, swinging the big stick and saying like, okay, this is the way it's going to be, when you've got a team that I think has to rebuild its rep a little bit. you got to be good. You got to be competent. But I think if you want to attract guys to a rebuild, you got to be exciting. You have to bring something new. And I think Dusty May does that.
Well, May's also attached to, I guess, a handful of players that are represented by Clutch Sports Group. Oh, well, so that's one way to, if you were to bring him up here, that would presumably strengthen the LeBron Ohio pipeline and, you know, perhaps increase the likelihood of getting Bryce James to come to Columbus for 1 year, which, you know, would be presumably a little bit more successful than what's going on at USC right now.
Yeah, but I would not, that would not suck. That would not be bad. I mentioned women's basketball not doing so hot. This is, again, a team that was just, they won the regular season in the Big Ten. They were.
I feel bad because we didn't talk about them last week after the Iowa loss.
Because now their
stock has been further cheapened in our oversight.
It's because we assumed that they were just going to go ahead and at least get to the finals of the Big Ten tournament, and instead they get upset in their first game against Maryland. And, you know, McGuff came out afterwards and said, look, this is a team that clearly did not, they did not take this with the seriousness. They didn't approach it with the seriousness that they needed to be successful. Maryland did, and ended up, it wasn't even really close. I mean, they beat the tar out of Ohio State. So I hope that's a wake-up call for the NCAA tournament. They've lost their number one, seeding almost assuredly. This is going to be a team that's going to be a 2 or 3 seed, which is going to hurt them even further, because then they're going to have to play some of these, you know, crazy teams as they get closer to, like, hopefully the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. Like South Carolina, for example, might be showing up on the radar sooner than they would have liked. So, you know, that's unfortunate. It really does suck, because this is a team that for basically the entire season just had this thing on lockdown, and then they come out and just lay an absolute egg against Maryland. They were leading after the first quarter, and then Maryland dropped 26 and then 27 on them in the second and third quarter. And that was it. That was all she wrote. That was pretty much the end of the game there. They were not coming back from that deficit, and could not. So, like I said, hopefully this serves as a motivator for the tournament, but they have some time to sit on their, you know, back on their heels a little bit and think about their next steps, and hopefully they can have a successful run like they did last season.
I would just say, think about how McGuff challenged his team relative to how Holtman challenged his team.
that's a good point. That's a good
much
point.
Much more eloquent job, I think, for McGuff, and, you know, because the same, it's two sides of the same coin in terms of, like, McGuff could have easily just said, yeah, they were soft and didn't take this seriously,
that,
and that's why they left. No, he said, He put it into much more sophisticated context than, you know, what the kind of frustration that was wrapped around what Holtman was saying. Granted, it's like two different teams that are having two different levels of success at that point. And McGuff obviously isn't concerned about job security relative to what Holtman was thinking at the time. Yeah. But it just is a baseline how you challenge your group when you're frustrated with them as their, like, leader and decision maker. What McGuff said in terms of putting it into context of, this is what a hungrier team looks like, and this is why we lost, and we can't have that mentality as the postseason is approaching. That is how you are supposed to, you know, relay to the media that you are challenged, or at least that's how you publicly challenge your team. I'm sure privately he's had much more, you know, vulgar way about going about it, as I'm sure every other coach does. Uh-huh. But if you're going to bring the media into the locker room as a way of trying to light a fire under your group, what McGuff said in light of their disappointing letdown performance to Maryland, I think is a much more encouraging way of going about it than what we saw from Holtman earlier this year. Now, I don't play on the women's basketball team, so we'll see how they took the comments.
Sure.
But from the outside looking in, I would be motivated by what he said if that was someone that I was playing under in terms of trying to rectify what had happened. I think that he put it into context very appropriately.
Well, he didn't say that his team was soft. He simply said that the competitive character that we pride ourselves on, right?
He, like, said we didn't fight.
Yeah, that's right. He said, and if we do that, we win, right? And that's what he said. He said, we have not lost a game this year where our competitive character – we have not lost a game this year where a competitor character hasn't been where it's needed to be. So in other words, if they are at where they're supposed to be in terms of, you know, quote unquote competitive character, their give a damn, all that stuff, they're going to win. And he knows that. And he's telling his team that, like, you can win every game, but you have to be in it. You have to have your head in it. That's different from saying you're soft. right? And you got to figure out how not to be soft. So I agree with you 100%. There is definitely a different approach to that. And if you want to motivate your team, you got to tell them what's possible and what they're able to attain, as opposed to saying they're not capable of it, which is, I think, what we heard from Holtman about a month ago. So excellent point out of you. We're going to get into some more things here. We've got some stuff talking a little about EA Sports, some unfortunate news about Jerome Baker, although I think he'll, you know, I think that story will have a happy ending here in a few weeks, and then some ridiculous gambling stuff. But before we get to Ask Us Anything, I want to remind you that the Dubcast is sponsored by the Dragon Store at 11warriors.com. Shirts, hats, stickers, check them all out. We're definitely working on some new designs, some new formats. So just keep an eye on that space here in the next few weeks, few months. There's going to be some interesting things coming through. So let's go ahead and do Ask Us Anything. We want to remind you that you can send us questions to Ask Us Anything to dubcast at 11warriors.com. And I remind you, you can ask us literally anything. We will
within
answer.
Reason.
Within reason. Well, you can ask us literally anything. I may not read every question. I tried to read every question. But just let your freak flag fly. That's all I'm saying. Do whatever you want, man. Send us whatever crazy question you want, and we will probably answer it.
But we reserve the right to
reword we reserve
your
the
question if it's
right.
a little too if it's a little too freaky.
That's right. If it's a little too freaky, we may change it in the telling. All right, this first one here is from Bryant, who says, if you could be like Corey Dennis and have three new jobs all within a month, which three jobs would you choose? It can be anything, even at 11 Warriors.
Oh, God.
I appreciate, by the way, I was going to talk about Corey Dennis until I saw this question earlier. And I appreciate the shade that Bryant sent to us with our woebegone quarterback coach, who is now, I think, at Tulsa at this point. Is that where he's at? Is that his most recent?
Who knows?
Nepa gig?
He's all over the map.
Yeah. So what would you, if you had three jobs in a month, if you could just like bounce around and you know, test out some jobs, what would you want to do?
I wouldn't want to do that.
I kind of would. I would.
That's
I would
a tough
want
question
to...
off rip, because if I'm working three jobs in the span of a month, then I presumably totally biff the first two.
All right. Well, let's say this. Least. Okay. How about this? Your third job is going to be like you're secure. You're safe. It'll be a good job. You get 2 weeks at the other two jobs to do whatever the hell you want, right? Like it won't impact whatever your third job's going to be. You'll, because again, you're a Nepo baby, so you get whatever you want. Doesn't matter. You don't actually have to try to find a job. You just get a job. That's how it works. They just hand them out. So,
okay. So I'd spend about a week on the beat so I could give Dan as many headaches as possible.
Perfect. Love it.
And then what would I do? Well,
again, you got two jobs that you can just do whatever the hell you want. I would. There's all kinds of jobs out there that you could. Like, I would go on Wall Street. Like, if I could have any job I want, I would be a stock trader, day trader at a high-powered Wall Street firm and be the laziest human being on the planet. I would trash the office. I would ruin accounts. I would do whatever I could to infuriate all the like type A cocaine powered personalities around me by being the laziest dude ever, showing up in flip-flops. Oh my God, I would infuriate those people as much as possible for the 2 weeks that I was there. That would be job number one. And I would enjoy myself enormously. Second job, flying out to Hawaii. I don't know how to surf, but I would be a surf instructor. And we wouldn't actually surf, but I'd be like the surf instructor from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where it's like, you know, do less. No, do less. Oh, that's not, you got to do, you can't. So I would just hang out on the beach, give bad surfing advice, and just enjoy myself thoroughly, charge $100 an hour to teach people how to surf when I don't know how to surf. And then I would come back and, you know, I don't know, I'd become the quarterback coach at Tulsa and then just ride that out for the next 30 years. I don't know.
Okay.
Actually, not Tulsa. I wouldn't go to Tulsa. But
I was trying to limit it to 11 Warriors.
No. But, God, no. Yeah. Do whatever you want.
I mean, I don't know.
You're a Nepo baby, dude.
This one,
the sky's the limit.
Yeah, but this is one of those questions where like I put too much thought into it just because it's like I don't have three different jobs that I think I would just want to try out like over, you know, the course of a week or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I
enjoy
think
life. That's what I said.
I think I would do like a week of beat journalism just so I could go to like one press conference and ask the most like out of pocket things possible that would like, get me fired in any other circumstance,
right.
Regardless.
Right.
And then after that, let's see. Yeah, that surf instructor one sounds pretty fun. I don't know. Maybe, God, see, I would say, I want to say something like monster truck driver or something for like a week, but like I'm worried that I would like injure myself due to the inexperience. Then I can't go to my next gig with, you know, as much sprightly energy.
There's a monster truck called the Cool Bus, which is a school bus monster truck. And I think that would be good. If I can't be a surf instructor, I think I would be the monster truck driver for Cool Bus. I think that would be pretty sick.
All right. I'll say, like, if this is like full Nepo baby, so I'll say something like, I don't know, Twitch streamer, just so I can like sit around and play video games all day. And then after I, you know, get bored doing that of a week, I'll, you know, I'll go full time professional gambler, and that I will, I'll be running. And that's my third gig. That's my last stop. And I've crushed it. And I'm as successful as Corey Dennis at that point.
I know.
And, yeah.
I mean, there you go. Really, in what other profession besides football coaching can someone be so bad at their jobs and yet get so many jobs, so many of those said jobs? Didn't we see recently on one of our discussions in Slack about how Bill Davis is now the linebackers coach for the Houston Texans?
Yep, that's correct.
So look, I know a lot of people out there might be worried about job security. You know, these are uncertain times. I'm just telling you guys, get into football coaching. You literally cannot be bad enough to lose your job, or at least not get another job after you lose your job.
The saddest thing I've learned as an adult is that success is not a reflection of how hard you work. It's just more of your ability to get along with other people.
Alex Grinch is drawing a paycheck for coaching defenses
right.
in college football. You got yeah. like, understand that. Ladies and gentlemen, that
because he's fun. Because he's fun to be around, apparently, not because he's good at it.
Well, you know what? And that's what I'm saying, though, man. Like, it doesn't. It really doesn't matter. Ability doesn't matter. It's just being a cool dude, and that's what I.
It's your ability to be well liked by your peers.
The best ability is availability. All right. So this last one here, this is from Kevin, who says, not counting Marvin Harrison Jr., which Ohio State football player do you think, at least in the last few years, including those on the roster right now, will be the best player in the NFL?
That's a good question.
I mean, I think from hype, I mean, I don't know there's much hype when the guy was, you know, the best freshman in America last year, but Caleb Downs.
I was going to say, yeah, it sounds like it's going to be Caleb Downs.
Caleb Downs, from all reports, sounds like he's basically an NFL player already. Jeremiah Smith, though, like at first I was like, okay, Jeremiah Smith, he's really good. And I saw some of those videos from practice, like that one where he snagged the ball from like an inch off the ground, and the fact that he looks like David Boston already. I was kind of like, okay, could be that guy. He might actually be the next Marvin Harrison Jr. There's a lot of, you know, wide receivers who could probably, you know, walk onto an NFL field and be totally fine on the squad right now. But yeah, Caleb Downs, I think, is the most surefire guy just in terms of overall ability based on what people were seeing last year. But I don't know. I mean, I think the easy way to answer that is like, okay, I got like Travion Henderson or whatever, but in practicality, running back position is such a crapshoot that you never really know what that's going to look like in the league. So yeah, I would have to go with Caleb Downs or one of the wide receivers.
Yeah. Caleb Downs or Denzel Burke, but again,
Burke's a good choice too. Yeah.
Corner's a very volatile position, and you know, Burke had a great freshman year and then had a sophomore slump and then bounced back in a pretty good way last season.
Right. So he was fantastic last year.
Hopefully he keeps the momentum instead of following the trajectory of up, down, up, and then down again, you know, heading into his swan song. But, you know, if he's able to keep the momentum going and, you know, they've really reclaimed their BIA status, then I would think it's going to be Burke immediately. And then, you know, in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years out, Caleb Downs will be next guy up.
Yep.
So,
all right. Well, that's Ask Us Anything. Thank you for sending those questions. We'll keep answering them. Let's talk a little bit more about the NFL, actually. I teased this a little bit. Jerome Baker was released by the Dolphins. Jerome Baker is one of those guys. There's like 3 or 4 dudes in the league right now who I did not expect, you know, contrary to the last question that they just answered, I did not expect to have a ton of success in the league. And he has gone out and been an incredibly solid player for them. Very, very consistent. He wasn't released because of ability. I think they had a problem with like whatever their negotiations were. They couldn't come to an agreement on their next contract. Jerome Baker is going to be playing next season. I know a lot of people in Pittsburgh are hoping the guy will roll down over there. You know, a lot of people in Cincinnati want him there. I don't think he's going to Cincinnati. Cincinnati's set at linebacker. They're not worried about that. But, you know, interesting that he couldn't come to agreement with the Dolphins. So we'll, I think he's going to make bank wherever he goes. Pittsburgh would be an interesting landing spot, although selfishly, I hope that's not actually where he goes. So.
They take care of their Buckeyes.
They do. There. They do take care of their Buckeyes. And, you know, I'm sure that would be, you know, a good fit for him. But, you know, AFC North, I would prefer him to stay out of it.
He's probably waiting to see if Russell Wilson is going to go there or not before he makes a decision.
That's right.
God, as a Steelers fan, that would just kill me.
That would be awful.
Do that.
That would be really stupid.
I'm already upset enough that Trubisky got a multi-million dollar offer from the Bills.
Yeah.
He's just still stealing money from NFL teams.
Love it.
You ruined my two favorite teams. I'm pissed.
It's pretty good. Also, another item of note here, Arch Manning not opting into the college football game. For those of you who don't know, if you wanted to be featured in the EA Sports College Football 25, sign an agreement that they get a right to your face and likeness and perpetuity for, you know, ever and ever and ever and ever. But in return, you get $600 and a copy of the game. So, wow, that's what a deal. Arch Manning has decided that he's not going to take that. And the quote, I'm trying to get the exact quote here. I think it was something where he was basically saying that he wanted to like develop himself first. He didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to focus on sports video games. He wanted to focus on sports on the field, which, okay, we'll get on the field first, Chief. I know he doesn't need the money, but it's just kind of, it's a weird approach.
I mean, I can kind of understand. Think about this. If you grew up playing those games and, like, you know, you see your dad and your uncle, or is it both of his uncles? Is his dad the one that, like, only played in high school and then couldn't keep playing because of injuries?
I think that is correct.
Okay.
Is, yeah.
Well, imagine you grow up seeing your uncles, like, perennially, especially Peyton, a 99 overall player, right. And then, you know, you're
getting, oh yeah, and then
presumably ready to make your video game debut, and you're not even going to crack like 75 overall, and you're not even the starter on the team. Uh-huh. It what I really think it is
you're 72 overall.
They say
10 or something. Yeah,
no publicity is bad publicity that doesn't involve felonious behavior. And have you seen any story sensationalized about any players opting in of the 10,000 plus that have done so? No, but the biggest story around the opt-ins has actually been the opt-out of
right.
Archie Manning. So in terms for a guy who hasn't been able to get past Quinn Ewers for the starting gig at Texas, this is like the biggest, most, I don't want to say marketable, that's not quite the right word, but in terms of generating buzz and profile for himself, this is the most significant thing that he's been able to do so far.
That's not a bad
so,
point.
You know, he doesn't need the $675 annually.
No, he doesn't. He definitely does not need that. But I wish that instead of saying, like, I'm going to focus on football, which makes how does accepting $600 from EA mean you're not focusing on football? But I wish he would have said instead, like, $600 is not enough for my name, image, and likeness, you know, to be property of a video game company. Because I don't think it is. I don't think if someone wants to capture your face and likeness and name and put it into a video game, $600 is not enough dollars. That's not enough. Okay. They're paying NFL players upwards of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, right? Now, granted, these are professional athletes who have a little bit more cachet nationally, right, than your average college football player. But regardless, it seems a bit unbalanced. So if I were a college football player, I probably would turn it down, if only to make a statement about the fact that I don't think I could be bought that cheap. I understand why a player would do it. It's cool to see yourself in a video game, and, you know, it's a way to get notoriety and blah, blah, blah. But for me personally, I think it's kind of, you know, it's a slap in the face a little bit. Now, granted, would anybody be clamoring to play a video game with Johnny Ginter in it? No. And if somebody, if like, you know, if Blizzard Entertainment approached me or Insomniac video game, you know, they're like, Johnny, you're going to be the star of our next video game. Here's $600. I would probably be like, I'll think about it. You know, like, it's not something I would reject out of hand because I don't expect anything like that in my life. But regardless, I do think that there needs to be a better, more in-depth conversation about how much someone's, you know, likeness, how much their name should be worth when it's used in this manner. And I'm glad that they came to agreement. I'm glad that it's going to get done. I will probably play the game. But yeah, I don't know. I think that the players maybe could have held out for a little bit more. Maybe that would have been possible if they were able to collaborate in some sort of union or group of player. I don't know. Anyway,
I just want to know how Archie feels about Quinn Ewers' kombucha money.
That's right. Should have gotten in the homebrewed tea game. Come on. What are you doing, dude? Jeez. Last thing before we get out of here. Ex-Vanderbilt quarterback Mo Hassan. He had 17 career pass attempts and never made a start, according to the Tennessean. But that doesn't mean that, according to him, the Italian mob didn't think he was not able to fix Commodore football games. So apparently, this is according to Mo Hassan, at a podcast that he hosts. He said that the mob, the Italian mob, not, which seems very, I feel like there are specific people within the time. Maybe he's just trying not to end up like in a rolled up carpet somewhere. But he said he was offered $300,000 to fix college football games when he was with the Commodores, which tells me two things. First of all, the Italian mafia does not watch a lot of college football. They're like, yeah, this guy seems. And secondly, what the hell is going on at Jason Aldean's kitchen and rooftop bar where they're approaching, where backup quarterbacks for Vanderbilt University are getting approached by the Italian mafia? Jason Aldean, a lot of controversies on that guy's plate. I don't think that he needs the Italian mafia on top of that. That's all I'm saying.
Do they not have enough Italian eateries in the state of Tennessee to, you know, conduct their business in a more, you know,
probably
authentic
not
location suited for the mob than
that could be the only
Jason Aldean's eatery?
Honestly, that could be the only Italian adjacent restaurant in Nashville, Tennessee, for all I know.
Is Aldean an Italian name?
No, Aldean is a redneck name. I don't know that there's a specific nationality or ethnicity associated with country ass rednecks, and this is coming from one, so I think the Italian mafia was like, you know what, we got $300,000, let's go to Nashville and see what we can stir up, if this is true, which I am highly dubious, but I appreciate Mo Hassan for getting this story out there and you know, letting people like us talk about it. So good for him, even if it's.
I mean, this is exactly why prop betting just got banned in Ohio, though, and why, unfortunately, you're probably going to see, well, at least prop betting on college players is because the amateurs are more easily accessible for this kind of stuff, and that's something else that you're seeing relative to. Right. The entire Temple basketball team this week as well, with U.S. Integrity now getting involved and investigating their team for point shaving scandals. Right. So it's I unfortunately didn't really want to think that this was going to have as profound of an impact in the infancy of, you know, sports betting really getting a lot of traction as it's gotten legalized in more and more states in recent years. But you are, I think the Iowa players that were in some hot water for the football team mm-hmm. actually just got acquitted for their alleged wrongdoing. So you got to let some of this stuff play out in terms of whether or not it was really happening, but you're seeing enough of a pattern of these stories at this point that, you know, as unfortunate as it may be for the Ohio sports betting audience that they no longer have access to prop bets, it's not just because, you know, players were sending, you know, Kyle McCord death threats for not rushing the over under one rushing attempt and McCord refusing to go past the line right. of scrimmage. No, it's because that I would be curious to see too, if that Vanderbilt story was really fixing games or point shaving, because Vanderbilt's already the worst team in the SEC. Right. It's not like you need their quarterback to throw the game. I think it's more about, is the spread going to get covered or not?
Yeah, yeah.
And what is your influence on doing that?
Yeah, well, and here's the other thing. So we went on to say, Mo Hassan went on to say, so this is Hassan speaking. He said, he meaning the Italian, this Italian mobster in a zoot suit, who sounds like Joe Pesci, apparently. He said,
he's Tommy DeVito's agent.
That's right. We regularly talk to guys at your position about fixing games. And by your position, I assume that he meant like starting quarterbacks and not backup quarterbacks, like quarterbacks who actually play. But anyway, he named guys in the SEC who I don't want to say their names because of the NFL right now, but University of Alabama, I'll tell you that. He said, almost every game in the SEC is rigged. Which, again, that sounds like an extraordinary accusation, which I think should require.
Well, mobsters never embellish anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or Mo Hassan, apparently. I am highly, like I said, highly skeptical of this claim. I do think it's kind of funny, though, that like Mo Hassan goes out there and says, I'm not going to name any names, but all the quarterbacks from the University of Alabama and the NFL, like, that kind of narrows it down, dude. Like, just say names then at that point. If you're going to say stuff like that, like, I know you have, like, I guess, plausible deniability because there's multiple Alabama NFL quarterbacks in the NFL, but like, it's like three dudes, right? So what are we talking about here? Just say who you mean if you're going to really go out on a limb like that. So I don't know. Pretty silly story. I, again, place very little confidence in it, but on the other hand, if, you know, Mo Hassan is like found buried underneath, you know, Giant Stadium or something like that, then
I do wonder, like, you know, as these, you know, presumed starters at other lowlier schools are seeing the amount of money that someone in their same position at a higher caliber institution is making off NIL, and they're not getting nearly as much for just as much work, but not nearly as much success. How easily accessible by those kind of criminals, like, now that we're in this, like, why, I mean, we're in the Wild West era, sure, especially with the recent, you know, neutering of the NCAA on legislating this stuff. You wonder how easily accessible these people are going to be to getting corrupted by forces in play that we can't really as easily
and
see.
And
like
in all
this.
Seriousness, like, if this is real, I hope Mo Hassan, like, you know, nothing comes of it and he's totally fine. And obviously nothing happens to the dude. On the other hand, I think it's probably more likely. I agree that there's more chance of that kind of stuff happening. I also think it's more likely that somebody got drunk at Jason Aldean's restaurant and, like, it's like, hey, that's Mo Hassan. I'm going to make him absolutely just crap his pants. And I'm just going to go up and mess with this guy. And he put on his
NIL money to eat at Jason Aldean's kitchen.
Hey, Mo Hassan. Yeah.
I compromised. I ate grilled cheese off the radiator.
Hey, he put on his Tony Soprano voice and was like, hey, get over here, buddy. Hey. And then, you know, and did this whole thing. And the Mo Hassan, like, has a story that he's going to tell for the rest of his life. So, again, I hope that's the most likely thing. I hope Mo Hassan is in no real danger by telling the story. But funny nonetheless. So that is the Dubcast for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about all the crazy stuff that's happening in college sports and with Ohio State sports and Ohio State basketball going into this tournament. They beat Iowa. They beat Illinois. I think the discussion here becomes very interesting. Iowa's a bubble team. Maybe they take their spot. So we'll see how that goes. But until then, I'm Johnny.
I'm George.
And we'll see you next time.
Take care, folks.